Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Chatting with Sharing. Today, what you'll be listening to is a recorded broadcast with Gary Williams and Vicki Nerling. They are very talented authors, and they're going to be talking about their historic novel, which is a YA novel called Collecting Shadows. Please do not call in during the show because it is a recorded show. Please enjoy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to speak with old friends Gary Williams and Vicki Nerling, and we're going to talk about their latest books and their series and writing and all that exciting stuff. Hi, Gary and Vicki.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey,
how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks.
We're doing fantastic.
I know you guys are in two different locations, so it's hard for you guys to talk and not know when the other is talking. So just letting the audience know they're calling from two different locations, and that's why there's a little overlay there.
And we apologize if we end up talking over each other.
For the people who haven't heard you guys talk, even though you've been on my show a couple of times, would you let them know how you guys met and how you started writing together?
You want to take
Gary,
that?
You want to take that one? No, okay.
Yeah.
why don't you field that one?
We're in deferral mood, Sherry. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Vicki and I met really in 2008. I had been writing for a little while and had self-published some books, actually I believe four in total by that point. And Vicki and I kind of met through some of the social networks and some of the writing sites and realized that we thought we could combine our talents. Vicki is very good at the grammatical side of things, and I'm kind of the idea guy. So we decided to partner in, I guess it was late 2007, Vic, and then by early 2008, we had rewritten one of the novels that I had worked on. And shortly thereafter, we got a literary agent to sign us. Now, as it turns out, things didn't work out well with the literary agent. After about 2 years, we did back out of that relationship. But we've been going strong really ever since. And on January 10th of this year, we've released our seventh e-novel thriller, and it's called Collecting Shadows.
That's really cool. Most of your books are, even though they're thrillers, they're very historical. Did you guys really get together and understand each other because you both like history? Or is that, like, one of the glues that brought you together?
That actually is part of it. Yeah, absolutely. I know Gary and I both get a lot of material from the History Channel and various TV shows. We'll take an idea that's presented on one of those shows, and we'll run with it. We'll say, well, what would happen if this had occurred? Or, you know, there might be some information missing that they can't find evidence of in the past. And we'll say, well, let's see what would happen if, you know, something had happened instead or in addition to what's presented in the history books. And so we kind of take that and run with it and extrapolate on it, and I think we end up with some pretty good tales. So a lot of what we write is a mixture of actual history and stuff that we make up, basically. But in most of our novels, we'll have an author's note section at the end where we will say, you know, here's what the actual history is, and here's what we've made up. And I think it works pretty well.
Yeah, we definitely share a love of history. I think Vicki said it really well. We love history, and it's something that a lot of times the stories almost pop out at us because there'll be a historical mystery. So it's always fun to take those, like Vicki said, and kind of put our own spin on things. But it's very important to us, too, to acknowledge at the end of these stories what's real and what's not, just so that, you know, the reader becomes educated on the true history as well.
I think that's really interesting. When I write stories, a lot of them comes from the History Channel and from different things about history. When you're watching, do you, like, get that moment? You know, where they're, oh, my God, that's amazing. And you just, your mind's already clicking away, even though the show's not even over yet.
Oh, yeah. I think that, and I think you do this, probably any writer does this. When you go just through the course of a day, if you hear something that's fascinating or you hear something that sounds interesting, you kind of either mentally log it or, in my case, I'll write down or record things throughout the day, is whether I'm watching the History Channel or just learning some new kind of obscure fact that we could work into a novel later. I do it constantly. It's almost a 24-hour thing with me.
And there's a lot of times we'll take an idea and we'll start researching it, and the research will reveal some really interesting facts and figures also. And we end up, you know, building on that, and we end up with a really cool story that is based on one tiny little aspect of history initially.
Have you ever noticed that, like, some of the channels will have these throwaway history shows? Like, it's not their thing, but they kind of have one thrown in. And you kind of, like, you're going through the channel, so, oh, that looks interesting. And then you get an idea for a novel because it was off the cuff completely.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, Sherry, I do it all the time. Everything I watch, especially if it's history-related, I'm looking for ideas on what we could fashion into a novel or at least piece together into a story we're current. I can't tell you how many times we've been in the midst of a novel. Vicki and I basically sit down and work out an outline in the very beginning of the story and kind of pattern it out. But as we go through the actual production of the writing, we might hear some fact or some figure that we say, you know, grab that, put it in here. And it's amazing how many times you can find things that blend in perfectly. Mm-hmm. Just because your senses are open, you're listening to certain things that apply to what you're working on.
And we find also that almost every single time after we've finished a novel, there will be a major event or a tragedy or an accident or something that almost parallels one of the events in our book. It's weird.
Oh, that's
yeah,
scary.
That has been weird. It really has been a little awkward sometimes.
That's actually really scary if you think about it. Oh, my God.
I know, right?
Oh,
we're clairvoyant. Yikes.
Yeah. I know it's strange. I'm writing a thriller based on old legend, and it's weird that education you give yourself when you're doing that, because I know very little about that time period, and so I've been reading a lot about it, and it's like a whole new area of interest to me. Have you found yourself going into areas of interest that you've not really been interested in before, but now it fascinates you?
Oh,
I think
without yeah. Go ahead.
Vic. Oh, I was just going to say that our current novel, especially. It goes into a lot of the history and the geography of St. Augustine, Florida. And Gary and I researched that tremendously in order to make sure that we had it right, to the point where our publisher said, hey, you know, this is starting to sound like a travelogue. Can we cut some of that out? But, I mean, we just got into St. Augustine and its history so much while we were writing the novel.
Yeah, we really ventured into a historical figure, Sherry, Henry Flagler, who, you know, some people know and some people don't. And the interesting thing about Flagler is he's pretty important to American history, especially in the entrepreneurial side of things. He was the one who, with John Rockefeller in 1870, started Standard Oil. But because But because Flagler only stayed with the company for the first 15 years and made his millions and ended up getting out, Rockefeller stayed. The only name you ever hear is Rockefeller. But Flagler was one of the richest men of his time in the United States. And he ended up venturing down to Florida on vacation once. And then with his second wife, they moved down here. And that's really kind of what our story focuses on, is the history of Flagler and a mansion that he built for his second wife in the early 1890s that was taken down in 1950 when relatives didn't have the money for repair and decided they just wanted to have it taken down. But pieces of that mansion were adopted by residents of St. Augustine because they so loved Flagler and the history that he had provided and what he had done there and the buildings he had built. So that's where we kind of got the idea for this entire novel, was that these pieces, whether they're pieces of the staircase, a fanlight window, whatever they had been scattered throughout the town in these homes in St. Augustine. And what was really interesting to us is nobody had an accounting of where everything went. There's no log that says this piece went here, this piece went there. So we looked at that and said, what if there was a code on each one of those pieces or some of those pieces that led to some treasure or something? So that's really where we got the idea for the story when we read about this mansion that had been taken down in 1950.
That's really fascinating. That is really cool. I've never actually heard of him. Is this going to be like a new series for you guys?
It depends on how well it does. If it does well, we could bring them that back.
That's the magical question, Sherry. We talked about it because this was a first for us, and though it's still a thriller, but technically this is a young adult book. We ingrained teenagers as our primary characters, sophomores, juniors in high school, and we incorporated a history club, the high school history club, of about five or six characters who are the focus of this book. So, yeah, we've kind of toyed with the idea of kind of a history club mystery series. So we thought we'd see where this one goes, how people take it. And so far the response has been very positive. The reader reviews that have come in on Amazon so far have been very, very good. So we're toying with that. We're already into our next novel, as you probably know. It's kind of a continuous cycle. We're already about two-thirds writing the next album, and it's not part of that series. But we could come back to it, like Vicki alluded to.
It all depends on how it does.
Yeah.
Right. And so far, it seems to be doing very well with adults. So even though it's a young adult genre, I think it's going to play well to different audiences.
Well, I mean, that's not unusual. Look at Harry Potter, Twilight. There are a lot of books that
exactly.
are supposed to be for younger people that adults read.
Yep.
Yeah, like
exactly.
Vicki said, we had to really, though, back off some of the history. And part of that was my fault. Sherry, I live in this area where the story takes place. In St. Augustine, I live in these historic streets and close to the church that Flagler built and where he's entombed now, close to the college, which was once his magnificent hotel called the Hotel Ponce de Leon. So I got a little information overload with some of this history. Went a little two details. We ended up having to back some of that out and make sure everything was perfectly germane to the story. But it was a good exercise, and we think we streamlined it down so that, you know, someone in Oregon could pick up the book and would like it and learn a little bit about Flagler and his time in St. Augustine and what he accomplished and would find it just as interesting as someone in Florida.
And also it would be of interest to young adults, since that's the genre that we wrote it in, so that, you know, they wouldn't feel like they were in a history class in school, but it would still have that historical element to it that would grab their attention and their interest.
A la Da Vinci Code, except that's not for young adults, but it grabbed people's interest because it was an exciting adventure, but they kind of got secretly crammed with history.
Exactly. That's right. You learned something whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is almost what you'd consider a regional novel in a lot of ways, Sherry, because it is kind of centric to this area. But we, like I said, we hope people find it fascinating. We found some of the research, especially about Henry Flagler's second wife. She became mentally ill about 13 years into their marriage, and she was just an interesting person who ended up eventually being put in a sanatorium in 1895 and spent the rest of her life there. But she was into the Ouija board. She was into seances, and it was just the whole history around her and how she kind of became mentally ill and did all these weird things, you know, helped with our story because then we were able to play that all in. But it was just fascinating stuff to learn. And we even think that, you know, high school kids would kind of find that stuff fascinating because of how far out she became, you know.
It sounds like Mrs. Lincoln, actually, sort of.
Oh,
a little bit, yeah.
A little beyond, but.
Really? Oh, wow.
Oh,
she was worse than Mrs. Lincoln. Okay.
Well, put it this way, Sherry. She was convinced that the Tsar of Russia at the time that was in love with her, even though she was married to Flag, was convinced that was going to be her next husband. She'd never met the man. And at the point that she had these crown jewels encrusted figurine made up for the Tsar she was going to mail to him, and Henry found out about it, that pretty much ended their marriage.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. But you know what? It helped with our story because we were able to work her craziness into it.
So what made you guys decide to do a juvenile novel? I mean, that's out of
we actually didn't.
Go ahead, Vic.
I was just going to say that we just kind of fell into that because neither one of us realized that if the main characters were young adults, that was the genre for the novel. So, I mean, we just wrote it from the point of view of those characters, and it ended up being classified as young adult because of it.
Yeah, we really had a slew of characters, and there's some adults too. And I mean, I guess in the back of our mind, we knew that with these characters being teenagers, it was more of a young adult, but we really didn't picture it as that. We pictured it as a thriller because of the age of some of the other characters. But by very definition, as our publisher reminded us, it had to be considered a young adult book. And it just worked out well for the storyline to have them be high school kids that working through this.
And the adults in it, are they their parents or their teachers?
Yeah,
yes.
Yep, good call. We've introduced the main character. His name is Liam. He's a young guy, 17 years old, but he's a sophomore. To 16, I guess, Vic. I'm jumping ahead of myself. But
Bailey is 17.
He goes to live with his aunt, who lives and works in St. Augustine. She has an antique toy store because he had lost his mother a few years ago from a disease, and his father had been killed in a tragic shooting. So he goes to live there. So you have the aunt, and we introduced a homeless man as a figure in the book. And Sherry, I can tell you, St. Augustine has a homeless population. It's probably larger than some places. So we kind of wanted to make it very realistic as far as types of characters you would have there. So that's kind of where we came up. We do have, as Vicki said, we have a teacher who runs this history class, or the history club, history class too. So we brought him into the story. And his great-grandfather, as it turns out, was a servant at Flagler's mansion, which was named Kirkside, by the way. Back then they named mansions. I'm not sure why.
Until the golden age, right? They did that until like the up until like the 20s, and then they stopped doing.
Oh
that.
Yeah, yep. And this was considered the Gilded Age when this time period occurs, especially with Flagler engaged. But it was a lot of fun
in the current time, but when the history portion of it goes back to the Gilded Age with Flagler.
Yep, that's correct, Vic.
Is the mansion still there? Is it like a historical thing, or what happened to it?
No, this is the one that in 1950 it's okay. It's kind of interesting because it was a relative of Henry's third wife, who it had been passed down to at that point, because Henry Flagler died in 1913 and his wife in 1918, but. A distant relative of his third wife, and it needed repairs at that time. It had gone into disarray. It had been unattended to, and they just decided to bring it down. and the entire estate had a church on one side of it, the mansion, and then the rest of the entire city block was part of the estate. So at that time, they subdivided it, and it's now 13 different properties with houses on it. So it's
wow.
It's kind of sad that they did bring it down, because Flagler later went on down to Palm Beach, Florida, and actually eventually down to the Keys. He's the one that built the railroad extension through Key West. It's still considered one of the greatest engineering feats of modern man. But he did have a mansion down in
West Palm Beach?
Yeah, Palm Beach, Florida. And it is a mansion, and it's a museum. But we kind of wish they had left the one in St. Augustine. But that's what gave us the story, because before the mansion was taken down, the St. Augustine citizens went in there and got different pieces of it and brought it and built it into their own homes.
That is really cool. Well, it's better than L.A. I mean, they knock down anything. I grew up there, and that's, I mean, Charlie Chaplin's house, who cares? We'll knock it down for a big eyesore. We'll just knock it down. I mean.
Oh, I know. And how many ancient and old artifacts are lost to history because nobody bothered to save it?
Exactly. There's some areas that they're very good about that, like Boston and other areas in the Midwest and stuff, but most places they destroy everything. I get so angry, especially when they destroy something that's central to the character of whatever city it is. It doesn't make sense to me.
That's true.
Well, and thank God they left the church up, because he built a church in 1890, and it's a basilica-type church there in St. Augustine. It's considered... I think CNN considered it one of the 8 great religious buildings in the United States, and it's just a fabulous church. It's modeled after St. Mark's. And Henry Flagler, his first wife, his daughter, his granddaughter, are all entombed in that church. So you can actually go in and see their tombs inside there. And there's a fourth sarcophagus cover in there that was intended for his third wife, but she... outlived him and then was buried in a family plot in North Carolina. So to this day, that fourth sarcophagus cover that's in this mausoleum room is completely unmarked and hasn't been moved since 1906 when the attached mausoleum was built. And that was another thing that gave us an idea for the story, but I don't want to expound on that because I don't want to give anything away.
Did you do a lot of research? Because I know churches keep a lot of records. Did you do a lot of research at the church that he built?
Yeah, what we did is we spoke to a lot of the docents, and we did research through books mainly, but we did talk to some of the docents. I was able to kind of get – Vicky wasn't there at the time, but I was able to get a back behind-the-scenes look inside the mausoleum, because they normally don't open it up. You can see through kind of a gate. So I was able to go in and get pictures and talk to different people and get a lot of the history. Yeah, it was fascinating. Have to almost understand Henry Flagler to understand why he did everything that he did and what he built. We hope we kind of brought that out in the book, kind of gave you an idea of his character and personality in the back history.
Sounds fascinating. We only have a few minutes. Would you please let people know where they can get the book and also what your website is?
Dick, do you want to take that? Or?
Absolutely. It's available electronically for download. It's not in print at this time, but Amazon.com, and you can look for Williams and Nerley, or you can look for the title of the book, Collecting Shadows. I don't think we have an active website at this point. Am I right, Gary?
No, we don't. We've actually kind of gone the way of Facebook at this point, Sherry, because it seems to be more productive and better use of time, to be honest with you, than websites these days. So we're at Facebook. I think it's just /Williams Nerley.
It's Williams Nerley. It is Williams Nerley. That's correct.
Yep.
So that's your Facebook page.
And we also have a Facebook page for the novel itself. So there's a Collecting Shadows Facebook page.
Right.
So if people want to find out more information, they could either go to your Facebook page or the novel Collecting Shadows Facebook page.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. you know how fast this
I know. I can't believe it's already been a half an hour. Let's go another half hour. Just kidding.
She's trying to kill me. No.
I know, right? Yeah, we made you get up early for this one, huh?
Yes, you did. That's okay. I love you. So that's why I did it.
And we love talking to you, too. I think this is, what, our third time on here?
Yeah, it's your third time. And
very
I always
cool.
love you on the show. We always have a good time.
Yes, we do. It's always a pleasure.
We're traveling through the years together.
Yeah. That's right.
We have. It sounds like an old Kenny Rogers song. Also, the last thing I wanted to know, do you guys have any book signings, personal appearances, conventions, or anything like that you're going to so people can meet you?
We really, because our ebooks now, the publisher that we're signed with, Sherry, it is ebooks for the most part. We really have not been out doing any signings. We've done a few sit-down things here and there, but we have nothing on the immediate horizon as far as that or conventions at this point. But we always
and part of that is my fault, too, because it's hard for us to get together as a writing duo simply because I'm also working on my doctorate degree at this point and getting heavily into that. So between my day job and writing and but studying, it's really tough to schedule anything.
Yeah, we're coming to the tail end of the next novel. I mean, we're 2/3 through writing it, so we're kind of in a crunch for the next 4 months, so we're really just trying to keep our nose to the grindstone there. And like Vic said, she's getting that little doctorate degree that's taking up all her time. So.
I know. My bad.
Little?
Yeah, I know. Not so little when you're studying 8 hours a day every day.
She knows. Kidding.
I know.
Okay. I figured you were pulling a chain on that one a little bit.
I know. We sound like an old married couple sometimes. And his wife is a really good sport about it, I have to say.
Okay, so we're at the end of the show. I'm sorry, I love talking to you guys. So everybody check out their Facebook pages. Collecting Shadows is the name of the book. And their pages, so it's under Williams and Nerley, is that the way it's set?
Williams Nerley, Facebook, yeah.
Williams Nerley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you guys for coming on. I really, really had fun.
Okay,
thanks,
Sherry.
Thank you. I hope you guys did too.
Yep.